Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste. Jumbo! Bienvenidos! Hey, my name is Jed Lee. Welcome to Reading with Your Kids. We're coming to you from the beautiful, wonderful, historical neighborhood of Reedville, located in the shadow of the Great Blue Hills in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so very honored and absolutely delighted that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show. Tell your kids, teachers, their librarian, the crossing guard, that they can find us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network. And they can hear us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, YouTube, Good Pods, Amazon Music, Audible, CastBox, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have a really wonderful show that we think will become one of your favorites. First up, Kathleen and Beth Rooney are here to celebrate Leaf Town Forever. It's their debut picture book. And later in the show, I have a listen back to a conversation we had with Janice Milicic about her book, Be Careful What You Hear. Hey, I want to let you know that this episode, Reading With Your Kids, is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance, onceuponadance.com. Are you looking for a book that moves you and your kids? Literally? And I mean literally. Once Upon a Dance turns story time into a dance-along adventure. Build confidence, create connection, and enjoy screen-free fun. With over 60 awards and 3,000 five-star reviews, these interactive tales inspire kids to jump, twirl, and imagine. For your next adventure, check us out at onceuponadance.com. You know, we were recently at the Chappaqua Children's Book Festival, and Once Upon a Dance, a couple of their books was on our shelf. So many kids came up and said, we have these books, they're so awesome. And they were excited to know that there are new titles available. Get your copies today, onceuponadance.com or at your favorite online bookstore.
Do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call. Because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at crazy low prices. They have access to great prices and discounts at over 500 different airlines. Plus 300,000 hotels and rental car companies. Their prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find the best price for you. Call SmartFares today and get ready to see the world with a fat wallet.
855-325-1823. 855-325-1823. That's 855-325-1823.
Hey, families, would you like to share a miracle with your kids? At the Wolf Conservation Center, hope was fading. The endangered Mexican wolves dreamed of a pup, but none had come. Until one tiny miracle changed everything. Meet Trumpet, a real-life wolf pup whose incredible birth brought joy, hope, and a lesson in conservation. Trumpet the Miracle Wolf, written by Leocadia George, is a heartwarming true story that will inspire your whole family. Teach your kids the power of hope, love, and protecting endangered species. Get your copy today and join the wild adventure. We have two wonderful guests for you today. They're coming to us from the Chicago area. They're here to celebrate their debut picture book. It's called Leaf Town Forever. Please welcome to the show, sisters. First up, Beth Rooney. Beth, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
And her sister, Kathleen Rooney. Kathleen, how's it going?
It's great. Thank you so much.
Happy to have both of you here. Kathleen, why don't you tell us a little bit about Leaf Town Forever?
So Leaf Town Forever is Beth's and my debut picture book. And I'm an author who has, you know, several books in the space for adults, including novels and poetry collections and essays. And Beth is a photojournalist, but this is our first ever collaboration and our first ever kids book. And it's based on a true story. It's about events that took place at Beth's kids, Rose and Luca's school. It was a Montessori school out in Oak Park, and it's really based on the true story of these kids who built a whole elaborate civilization out of leaves.
All right, Beth, you got to elaborate on that. This is I don't care if we give away spoilers. No, I need to.
Well, so we were in the midst of the pandemic that we were, you know, just chatting about. So it was 2020, and because it's a private school and they were able to safely mitigate risks, the kids were in person in the fall of 2020, but they had to stay at least 6 feet apart, even outside. So the kids had to kind of reimagine how to play and how to interact in a way that was still fun and meaningful, but still safe. So they came up with Leaf Town, and it just became this daily story that my daughter Rose would tell us, and then I would share it with Kathleen, my sister, and we would kind of talk about it. And it was just, you know, what's happening at Leaf Town, and you know, who's building what. And because they came up with hotels and banks and grocery stores, like there were different every.
Oh, Kathleen, Beth's is technology is not right now.
I'll jump in.
Okay.
So, yeah, so they came up with everything that you would imagine would happen in a real town, you know, restaurants and barbershops. And they, you know, even accounted for like a jail for if there were criminals in Leaf Town. And so it was just fun to hear all the gossip about Leaf Town. And so at that point in November of 2020, I said it sounded like an essay. And so we wrote this essay for The New York Times, and it appeared there. And then a picture book agent approached us and asked if we would ever consider adapting the story into a picture book. And we said, yeah, if you'll teach us how to do it. And, you know, shout out to Gwen Beal. She, you know, taught us, because I think, I mean, you know, from this podcast, like writing a picture book is harder than it looks. Mm-hmm. And so I think she taught us all the rules of the genre. And so we can say more about like the actual plot, because it's a fictional book. It's not, you know, a non-fictional thing. So it's definitely inspired by a true story.
Yeah. Well, I love it. As somebody who writes longer form pieces for adults, I'm imagining the biggest challenge might have been trying to tell this whole story in only 600 words or so.
Yeah. So what we did is we figured out over the course of writing it that we needed to be much shorter than we were. And ultimately, the solution that we hit on was the beautiful poetic form of the haiku. And probably listeners are familiar from, you know, maybe their elementary school classes with how the haiku is only 17 syllables. And typically in English, it gets translated into a line of 5 syllables and then a line of 7 and then another line of 5. And so we thought that could be first a good way to sort of condense our wordiness. And second, because the book we ended up writing is very tied to the seasons, Leaf Town starts in the fall because that's when you get leaves, but the kids in the book figure out how to sustain it through the winter and the spring and the summer. And so because haikus are tied to the seasons, we thought it would be a perfect form to kind of try to tell this narrative, and it worked. So the book is only 423 words. I counted because I was like, how short did it end up being? Uh-huh. And it's only 423.
Oh, cool. Beth has I think she's coming back.
Yeah, she is.
There we go. Well, her chair is back, but you and I can continue on until Beth's technology comes back in. When you're talking about haiku, is that the once was a man from Nantucket kind of?
Those are limericks, so similarly short, but haikus don't rhyme. So it's a non-rhyming book. So it's poetry, but it's just syllabic as opposed to a rhyme scheme.
Okay. Can you give us maybe a line or two from the book?
Yes, I have conveniently Leaftown right here. So I'm so glad you asked. So I'll just read like the first three haikus so you can
Sure.
kind of get a sense of it. Lucinda watches golden leaves fall gently down. Could they make a town? Friends gather, plans hatch. The town would last forever. Leaftown forever. The treasure shop grows from a pile of oak leaves. Now to collect a trove.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. That must have been when you had the idea to write in haiku. Was this something that was like, boom, this is going to be great? Or was it, oh, now we just made this work so much harder for us?
It was kind of both. I think it came to us in that almost thunderbolt flash of inspiration. And I think as soon as we hit on the idea, we knew it was the true form that the book had been seeking. But then we had meetings where we actually got together. We had been collaborating, remotely, but we figured when we got to the haiku, we needed to be in the same room, sitting there. And what I love about when you're writing haiku is it makes everyone back into a little kid again. And so you've got your fingers out and you're counting like one, two, three, just to make sure you get the syllables. And so we sat in a cafe in Lincoln Square here in Chicago, kind of like crazy people, just like counting out and saying words and making sure we got it right.
Yeah. And I believe Beth is back.
Yeah, can you hear me better?
We can hear you better. We can see
Okay.
you're moving, and that is wonderful. We're
Okay.
worried that you were paralyzed for a moment.
No.
So
Sorry about that.
Kathleen just told us all about Leaftown, and so we're done. So thanks for coming back. I could get, no.
I apologize. I don't know. Anyway, yes.
Anyway, so
Sorry.
Kathleen was telling us about the book that it's written in haiku. And I'm imagining that that's something that you're very familiar with, Kathleen, as somebody who writes poetry. Beth, for you, was that a challenge, a real challenge, kind of think, starting to think in haiku and think as a poet?
No, I think it was a nice way to, it almost made it easier to have like a form to follow, and it made it a simpler process, and kind of the restrictions, the parameters made everything just flow a little more easily. And a lot of people talk about like the connection between poetry and photography. So I read a lot of poetry, and not as much as Kathleen, to be fair, but I do read a fair amount. And just kind of, it felt natural. And given how many books we read to the children, and at that age when we wrote this, they were younger. So we were doing more rhythmic reading anyway. So it kind of flowed, and it was a nice natural way to pull the story together.
Yeah, cool. Now, I know that sisters, brothers, they can have some sibling rivalry sometimes. Was there any of that going on as you two were collaborating about this? Beth, did Kathleen ever say, "I'm the author here. Just take a picture of us. Be quiet. Let me write this stuff."
No, we kind of we just kind of emailed back and forth. Like it started with like kind of like I would write something, Kathleen would mark it up, and then she'd send it back to me. I would mark it up. So it really did feel collaborative. There were a few things, like a couple word choices where we kind of were like, are you sure that's really what like sounds the best, or like I like my way better, but it was very civil the whole time.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, what's cool is in my non-kidlit writing life, I am mostly a solo writer. And so I think instead of any rivalry, it was like more immediate real-time responses, because when you're normally a writer, you write something and you let it sit, you revise it, and then maybe you send it to your friends, and then you send it to your agent, you get feedback, so it's this very slow process before you show it to anyone, and then you usually show it to someone in this more delayed and formalized way. And so this felt more like a game. It felt more like we were playing, almost like, I mean, Beth and I both played badminton in high school to reveal the kind of dorky like sports that we played. It's harder than it looks. Like writing a picture book, badminton is much harder than it looks. And so I think to me it took me back a little bit to our badminton days of just hitting it back and forth, and both of us wanting to give the best possible shot and keep the volley up as long as we could. So it really was like a game in the best way, whereas regular writing can feel like playing solitaire for a long time.
Now, it's great that you guys were collaborating and that was a lot of fun, but one of the things about writing a picture book is that you also have to collaborate with an illustrator, and you actually don't actually get to collaborate all that much with your illustrator. You kind of, here you go. Was that difficult?
Yes, I think we'll both speak to that. I think it was difficult in the sense of we were both so excited, and we tend to be pretty, if you want to be positive synonym about it, we're pretty eager. If you want to be a little critical, we're kind of impatient. So I think, you know, we had it ready to go and it was very exciting. We met, you know, as you do with our press, University of Minnesota, and, you know, kicked ideas back and forth, and we settled on the amazing, amazing, Betsy Bowen. She's just sort of like a legend as an artist and as an illustrator. And so I think the hardest part was, we were so stoked to see what she was going to do to interpret our words that, you know, the usual like year to 18 months, which is typical, just felt like excruciatingly long, even though it was normal. But I don't know if Beth, you want to add?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a very long wait, you know, and we were just so excited. You know, and we just kind of, are they here? You know, like to the press, we were just like so excited. It felt just like kids like waiting for Christmas, like is it finally happening. So that when we did get them, it was the most beautiful surprise. Like it was just so lovely to see how she interpreted our words and the world that she created and visualized was just so stunning. It was amazing.
I think we both like cried.
Yeah, for sure.
I was blown away when I first started reading with your kids 8 years ago. And after about 6 months, we had a publisher on of Familius Publishing. And when he told me that it can take 3 to 4 years from the time he buys a manuscript till it hits the shelf, I was blown away. I'm like, yeah. Well, it's not enough time for me to write any kids' books. So I'll just keep talking to people.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, what's funny is like we, you know, we hope to be able to write more and we have more ideas and we're still collaborating. We have some manuscripts in progress, but we figured you never know. So, you know, heaven forfend, if this is our only shot, we want to meet Betsy. Because I think that's the thing, too, that can seem kind of wild from the outside is to your point, you know, that it isn't that collaborative. You kind of turn the manuscript over and then you patiently or impatiently wait. But we really, really wanted to meet Betsy, you know, not to meet and work, but just to meet her and be like, who is this incredible person who's going to be doing this project with us? And so last fall, almost exactly 1 year ago, Beth and I hopped in a car and drove all the way up to Grand Marais, which is at the very top, you know, northern bit of Minnesota, right about 40 miles from the Canadian border, where Betsy has lived for many decades. And she has her, you know, farm on the outskirts of town. And then she has her beautiful studio in a renovated church in town. And yeah, we just met her. And it was funny too, because we knew she was working on it, but it was like, we didn't speak of it. Like we all knew why we were there, but we weren't like, oh, let us see anything. And she wasn't like, oh, you want to see something. It was like, you'll see it. Like we'll hang out all weekend, but you'll see it when you see it. And so it was very like fun, but also strange.
Yeah, that would be very, very, I don't know if I could have done that. And I'm surprised because we've talked to a lot of editors and whatnot. I'm surprised that they didn't put a guard on the way up to her farm.
Yeah. I mean, we did ask, we were careful about it, and it was kind of like, yeah, as long as it's just a hangout and nothing, no business, just a hang. And so it ended up being really lovely. And, I think, you know, just a shout out to Betsy too, to see, like, I don't know, I encourage everyone to just check out her other work too. She has a great website if you go up to Grand Marais, but she's just a pillar in the community, and she's so supportive of other artists. And I think the thing that struck us is we're pretty like quick and we say a lot of words and we move fast. And Betsy was just much more serene and slow. And I think it was cool to get to spend time. And even though we didn't get to talk about the project, we felt a greater trust. Like I think a lot of times opposites attract, or, you know, somebody has to be the kite, somebody has to be the string. And so I feel like that was cool. We got real like kite string energy just by spending time with her.
Cool.
Yeah.
Beth, I'm wondering, this story was inspired by your kids.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think about their story being turned into a book?
They loved it. They loved the whole process. Like, we kind of chatted with them about it, and they were very eager to see that their names weren't changed, that they, all of their friends are in it, and that, you know, that they all get to be part of the actual story. And some of Rosie's classmates made like stickers that said Leaf Town, you know, and Leaf Town Forever. And so they were all very excited and have been asking about it over the years. When is it going to get published? When is it going to get published? And, you know, we were like, we don't know, but we'll tell you when it happens. So they were thrilled. And now that they've read it, they're like, oh yeah, we remember, you know, and it kind of always brings back these memories of their time when they were at the school and those memories of those friendships, because just as time passes in the book, a lot of time has passed since Leaf Town existed, you know, so Rose was in third, fourth grade, you know, when Leaf Town was happening. And now she's a freshman in high school, you know, so the time has really gone almost like parallel with reality versus in the book. So it's kind of cool to see. And when we, Kathleen and I, talk about Leaf Town, and there's like this bittersweet memory, and there's kind of like a nostalgia from where we are in life, and the kids just view it as this joyful memory, you know, because they're still like 14 and 11 versus in their 40s.
Yeah. Well, the pandemic was such a weird, just such a weird time in the way and how we reacted to it all over the world, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, I remember having a conversation with my beautiful wife, who is was a teacher in the Boston Public Schools before she retired. And I remember, when she came home and she said, oh, they're going to come up with a plan. The kid's going to stay 6 yards away from each other. And I said, okay, so what's that going to look like when your kindergarten class of 30 kids mm-hmm. is 6 yards away? And I found a picture of a building. I said, this is how far the line will be. And boy, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, so are we. And I mean, I think like one of the things, you know, the pandemic doesn't get mentioned anywhere in the book. And I think one of the things, though, that like looking back on it now, like the pandemic gave everyone such a bizarre sense of the passage of time. Like it just, mm-hmm. it warped how time passed and our perception of when things happened. And, you know, Leaf Town is very tied to the season. So I think we translated that into a more universal, like just the passage of time in a bigger way. Cause, you know, to the extent that there's, you know, we hope it's just a fun story, but if there's kind of a message, it's sort of about, you know, sustaining a community over time, like how the passage of time is inevitable and it can cause kind of this disintegration or this entropy or this dissolution. And so it's really kind of about, you know, keeping things together or also like handing them off to the next generation, you know, like the kids are going to grow up and they're going to leave and, you know, what's going to happen? Can Leaf Town really last forever? So, you know, that's like why it's called Leaf Town Forever.
Yeah. And Beth, one of the things I love asking authors is what kind of conversations do you think families can have as they're experiencing a book together? You've experienced this book with your kids in many different ways. What kind of conversations did that experience inspire?
Well, because they're in the book, I feel like it's different than a family that like doesn't have their kids in the book. But I think the beauty of the story is that it is just this universal desire to be in nature and to play and collaborative play that all children have. And parents can kind of remember when they were that age and out playing. And the nice thing is it's universal because all you need is some leaves and some friends. And then you can do this beautiful community building. You know, it's just this beautiful opportunity to talk about the things you love, what's worth protecting, what makes a town a town, what makes something worth saving, how do you save it without becoming the thing that's trying to destroy it, you know, how do you, like, you can go super deep, or you can just stay, like, all you need are some leaves, you don't necessarily need to have your iPad or your tablet or whatever, you can just go outside and play with your friends. So I think, like, those are the conversations we had a lot, and just kind of talking about, with Luca and Rose, just the beauty of that time, like Kathleen alluded to already, that passage of time happens so quickly. And then, but when you're outside doing something with other people, it kind of slows down and becomes this beautiful, timeless space. Mm-hmm. So the kids have kind of chatted about that too.
Yeah. Neat.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one of my fondest memories of, we had, you know, our beta readers, we showed it to our friends, you know, who also have kids, you know, who are, you know, disinvested kids, not part of the true story. And our friend Julia Fine, who's also a writer, her son Elliot, like she read him just like a beta version of the text. And she said, and this I think is kind of speaks to like what can happen when you read the book. She said that as soon as they were done reading Leaftown, Elliot immediately started to gather like flowers and leaves and rocks and shells and like wanted a box. And he started to build his own version. He's like, I'm making my Leaftown. And I think that's a thing that can happen is, you know, what can you build with whatever is close to hand? And how can you just take your imagination, which feels very abstract, and just make it physical and make it concrete?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. Kathleen, as somebody who writes a lot for people who, in your mind, I'm imagining you know that most people are going to sit down and read your book by themselves, maybe on a train on the way to work or whatever. A picture book is meant to be read aloud by an adult or a loved one to a kid. Was that present in your mind, and did that change the way you kind of write?
Yeah, it did. I think, you know, we were kind of trying to write it in a way that we knew it would be read aloud, and that we knew it would be read aloud many, 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 many times. Hopefully, you know, because that's the thing is if a family or a kid likes a book, it's gonna get read again. And so I think, you know, I tried to think really hard, and I know Beth did too, about writing the kind of picture book that we would want to read over and mm-hmm. over again. And I think, you know, we sort of tried to just put in like really concrete words, like, you know, I'll read another little bit. Leaftown grows large with avenues of grass looping like bumblebees. Broad roads meander past the bakery, ash leaf homes, and birch restaurants. And I think, you know, we hope that you could read that and just keep going if you wanted to, but that if, you know, the kid needed to be like, what's a birch? What's an ash? And, you know, maybe mom and dad know and they just explain, or maybe that's an occasion to go when you're done reading the book and, you know, get a nature book or, you know, hop online and start to learn about, you know, tree identification. So I definitely think we tried to pack it with stuff that would, you know, feel that kind of interactivity and that kind of extra learning.
Yeah. I love it. Now that the book is out there, are we going to see a sequel? Are we going to have a different series of picture books coming from you too?
Yeah. Beth, do you want to?
Well, we have some manuscripts, like Kathleen said, we have some ideas kind of percolating. It won't be like Leaftown Forever part two. You know, we have some other characters that we've been developing. I don't, Kath, do you want to?
Yeah, they're all kind of tied to the natural world. I think, you know, we're so incipient. We're like, we just did the thing last week where we, you know, got out our Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators directory and started querying agents, because Gwen is not our agent anymore. It was amicable, but she went and joined a different agency and went in a different direction. And so we, you know, parted ways with love. And she's so excited that Leaftown is out, even though she's not really doing the picture book space anymore. So we're on the market for a new agent, but all of our friends in the field said that you need to have more than one. So we have, mm-hmm. yeah, two standalone, also tied to nature, one about birds, one about spiders. Mm-hmm. And then we have an idea for a series about two sisters who are moles who like to solve mysteries. So we're kind of leaning into the nature and the sister yeah. angle, because we love a sister act.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Beth, why don't you tell us where we can go to find out more about Leaftown Forever? And if you have a website for your photography, let us know about that too.
Yeah. So Leaftown Forever is found at leaftownforever.com, which is great. I'm glad that website wasn't taken. And then my website is just bethrooney.com. That's where my portfolio lives.
Uh-huh. Great. And Kathleen, do you have a website for your work?
Yeah, I do. KathleenRooney.com, pretty straightforward. And then also if people, you know, like poetry, like the haiku angle, I also co-run an organization here in Chicago called Poems While You Wait. And if you go to the Tumblr, Poems While You Wait, it's where we, you know, set up a a group of us with our manual typewriters in a public place. Sometimes places like the Chicago Children's Museum or the, you know, Museum of Contemporary Art Family Day, or just last weekend we were at the Museum of Science and Industry for a bugs insect exhibit, and people give us a topic like spiders, and we write them a poem on that topic. So that might be of interest to people here too.
Yeah, I saw something on social media about people with the typewriter that most people don't know what it is anymore.
Yeah,
typewriter on demand, and it was very cool. Although one of the videos, the police were coming and said, "You can't be here. You have to go."
Oh no, that's too bad.
But cool. Well, this has been great. I've had a blast learning about Leaftown, and we've been speaking to Kathleen and Beth Rooney. My friends, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com, promo code READ to get 20% off. Because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. Hey, my friends. You know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook, wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Joining us right now from beautiful Port Jefferson in Long Island, our guest is here today to celebrate her beautiful picture book. It's called I Hear the Snow, I Smell the Sea. Please welcome to the show Janice Milicic. Janice, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Delighted to have you on. I am curious about the title. Tell everybody all about I Hear the Snow, I Smell the Sea.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yes, it is a picture book about a young girl exploring the changing seasons, and this young girl is blind. So she's going to be using her senses of hearing, smell, taste, and touch, mostly not taste so much, but throughout the book, it's hearing, smell, and touch that she expresses how she explores the seasons. And the way she does it is through many different activities that she's engaged with her mom, mm-hmm. Because it just explores, you know, all the different things that children can learn through incidental learning and firsthand experiences. Mm-hmm. So in beginning with winter, she explores the snow and builds a snowman with her mother, rolling the snowballs from, you know, small and medium and big, and then stacking them up, finding the different accessories to make her snow friend, give the snow friend a face and clothing because it's cold out, she says. And then we go into, from winter, we go into spring, where she explores the garden and all the different flowers that she smells, the the different sounds that she hears from robins singing and bees buzzing, and then into the summer where she explores firsthand with her mother the shoreline and wading into the ocean and then floating weightless in the water with her mom. And then finally in the fall where she explores the fall leaves and builds, you know, heaps a pile of leaves with her mom and then gets to do the famous jump into it and, you know, crash into it, which all children, actually adults, love too, I think. You know, so that's the main part of it, is just exploring the seasons and just to express to children who are visually impaired or blind that they're represented in a way that shows that how well they use their senses and how much, how rich it is that their experience. And it also demonstrates how important that incidental firsthand experience is for all children to build a concept development, as well as just get a greater understanding of the world around them. But most importantly for children who don't have the vision or are visually impaired, because it without that, they don't get the wholeness of an activity or a concept. Like, say, for instance, if a child who has a visual impairment or is blind and they hear somebody say, oh, a puppy, how cute, or a kitten, how cute, they kind of get that sense, oh, it's going to be nice. But it's quite different from having a puppy or a kitten in your lap and, you know, feeling the boundless energy, the wet nose of a dog, a puppy, or, you know, the mules of a cat, and feeling the all the legs and the, how quickly they move and how they bend and the tail and the fur and the get all the senses in, that gives them a much greater, richer concept of what a cat, what a puppy is, you know?
Yeah. You know, the title, I Hear the Snow, I Smell the Sea, I think people can, most people can relate to I Smell the Sea, but I Hear the Snow. I had an opportunity. I lived in a part of Boston and I was literally across the street from the beach. And my favorite time to visit the beach was in the winter, in snowstorms, or in until snow. And there is a quiet, but also this just wonderful sensation when you're on the beach and it's snowing. And you can actually hear the snowflakes coming down. And not we're not talking about a violent storm, but it's just it's hard to describe, but I can relate to that.
Yes, I think, well, especially, you know, for those of us living in the Northern Hemisphere where there are such differences in the changes of the season, especially, I know, I think many of us from the Northern Hemisphere can understand that sense, like you were mentioning about snow falling, but also before snow falls, there's cold takes on more than just a temperature. There's a scent or a lack of scent, if that could explain it. And then it also involves a quietness that is like palpable. And you know snow is coming. It's just like, I know many people have said, oh, I can smell it in the air, you know. And it,
What inspired you to write this book, Janice?
Oh, gosh. I've been a teacher for the visually impaired for 30 years or so. And it's all of my students who have been, who've taught me throughout the years, just to perceive things in a way that I would be able to explain and give them a greater perception of whatever the topic might be. So the inspiration were my students, you know, and the main character in the book, Nevaeh, is an amalgamation of all of those students. So, yeah, they just, I have to say, I'm privileged to be able to work with students that I have now, are preschoolers, and learn from them every day, I have to say. Learn how best to get an idea across or a perception across or to give them confidence. You know, we can do this. We can we can take a next step a little further. So that's what the whole book is really about, is that, oh, there's a child that actually is taking a step further, you know, wants to explore, just like all children, but they all children also have those, and adults as well, you have things where you're a little afraid to do it. It's a challenge. Should I do it? And yeah, I think that's pretty much really what the book, where the book came from, was the inspiration about how much I've learned from them and how exciting it is to see the children make those steps on their own, kind of like with autonomy and independence, mm-hmm. to explore the surroundings around them and to learn from it.
Yeah. That, you know, as you were talking earlier and describing the book and what your main character is going through, and you were talking about building a snowman and rolling the snowman, the base up, and then the next one. And I had this weird thought, and I can understand if somebody is partially visually impaired, how they could understand, get the connection that, oh, I can't see this, but other people can see this in a fuller way. You know, I understand, oh, I can't see. Oh, that's it. But somebody that's completely blind, I wonder how, if they have a concept of what part of their sense they're missing. I know that sounds silly. I'm making myself curious.
Well, what I've learned from my students is everybody's vision is typical to them.
Mm, okay.
So, you know, our vision, you and I are both wearing glasses, not that anybody could can see us, but we're both wearing glasses. But your vision is completely different from my vision. We see the world in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned like totally blind. Well, that's vision is so individual that mm-hmm. somebody who is legally blind versus someone who has, say, light perception, they're going to be using whatever visual sense they have, as well as their other senses, to get a greater picture.
Mm-hmm.
Within the book, I have, and the illustration shows it as well, where the mom is reaching down, and the child is holding usually a finger or a wrist, two fingers. When we walk sighted guide with a child who's that small, preschoolers, you would walk sighted guide with your hand towards your side, and they would hold two fingers, and they would feel your body move to get the snow, to start rolling a snowball. And that's depicted in the text as well as in the illustration by Chris mm-hmm. Rochka. And so you would get the sense of, oh, I have to roll it. You kind of get a lump first, and you know how you roll it into bigger and bigger and bigger, and how it continues to kind of stick if it's the right kind of snow.
Yep.
It has to cooperate first.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you wrote this to kind of inspire kids with challenges to go out and try difficult things and not be afraid. And we certainly know that it's a wonderful gift for a kid to be able to see themselves depicted positively in the pages of a book. But I love the fact that I hear the snow, I smell the sea would be a great window for kids who aren't challenged by visual impairment to see how their peers, how their friends might be perceiving the world, and help them have a little bit more empathy and understanding of their classmates or neighbors.
Yes, actually, that's true. I guess that was part and parcel in my whole idea, because a lot of times I will go in, I will push into the classroom often. If a child is a Braille learner,
mm-hmm.
so we're working on, I mean, for preschool, we're working on the fundamentals of them using their fine motor skills and getting to Braille. We're getting. Again, often I have students that are peers that are excited. Oh, you know, Miss Jan brought in the Brailler, and they want to scribble just as much as their peer is. So I usually have the student teach their peer
mm-hmm.
a little bit about the Braille, a little bit about the keys, and get an chance to experience that. But yes, I think empathy is true, but also I want children or the peers of my students to also see the competence,
yeah,
you know, and the autonomy. They're just as
mm-hmm.
Capable.
Yeah, yeah, and we've had some people on from the government and the National Library, and the advances in aids to help people with visual impairments read and get access to information is really amazing technology. This is one area where technology is really a gift.
It is, but there is also the importance of Braille being available because that is what where literacy is going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
The audio is great and it does help actually everybody, but you're not going to learn spelling from that, and you're not going to
right. But I was mentioning I was learning that there are machines that come out now that, you know, about as big as a cell phone, where the Braille letter will pop up, kind of like, you know, when you're reading a teletype and there's letters
right.
going across the page. Same thing with Braille. The kids can feel the, mm-hmm. the letters going underneath their hand, and I'm just kind of blown away by all this, how we can use technology to make the world more accessible for folks.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Braille note takers, yeah, and they, they're really cool, and they go so quickly, and the children, just like any technology, they have it like on top of us, like really quick.
Yeah. Now tell me, when you were telling me that you've been teaching kids for decades,
yeah.
when you're in college, was that your goal to specifically work with kids with visual impairments, or were you just want to be a teacher and this is where you ended up?
Well, actually, I was always working from actually high school on. I worked in Town of Oyster Bay. They had a camp. And I would always work the summer camps for kids who had disabilities and also with adult children, and parents would give them respite. They were called respite nights. Mm-hmm. So I started that in high school. And then I volunteered at Helen Keller National Center, which is in Sands Point on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And the individuals there are deaf and blind. And it's like a vocational school where they go to learn how to live more independently.
Yeah,
and so that was my first foray into really working with individuals with visual impairments or blindness. And I went to St. John's for special education. That was the year that I had available to me. And then from there, I went on to Hunter specifically for to work with students that were visually impaired.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah. And this is, I believe, this is your third book.
I think it's. Fifth. One of them was an ebook, so I don't know if that quite counts, but I guess it does.
We love all media that's created. Well, we don't love all media, but we count everything. Are all of your books? Do they all touch on folks with visual impairment?
No, this one I had written, I had started at the preschool that I'm at now. I've been there now about 17 years. And I met a student, and her name was Nevea, which I thought was a beautiful name. And that's, I took that part of it, because it's actually heaven spelled backwards.
Yeah.
So I always loved that. And so that kept in the back of my mind. And just... you know, working with preschoolers, it's, you know, you get to play.
Mm-hmm.
For them to learn, they have to laugh. So you have to play. You have to be a good player. And so that's kind of where it came about. And I just, it just felt very natural for me. You know, I had an affinity for it. And so the story I wrote, oh my goodness, let's see, like close to 15 years ago, I would say. But it just didn't find its right time until now. So.
Awesome. Well, we're certainly happy that it found its right time. One of the things I love to do, because my beautiful wife was a special needs teacher for 34 years. She retired a couple years back. And, of course, she loved teaching, but there are certainly some issues. And all the authors who are also teachers who've come on the show have said, there's a lot of challenges facing teachers. So I was wondering, if I were to give you this magic wand and because I can make anything into a magic wand. But if I was to give you this magic wand and say, wave it and fix whatever it is that needs fixing in schools, what would be the thing that you'd look to fix?
Oof. Communication.
Between the
everyone.
Between families and teachers.
All of the above. Actually. All of the above. Yeah, yeah, really, really having that, you know, that access and the back and forth. That's one of the things I love to do. I'm an itinerant teacher for the visually impaired. Many teachers of the visually impaired are itinerants. They travel from school to school. Mm-hmm. My particular situation is different working in a preschool, so I work in two different centers. But you travel. But as such, I have the freedom versus a classroom teacher to contact the parents every time I see that their student or their mm-hmm. child and let them know what we've done, maybe what they, you know, if they've done it at home, if they could work on this because we're having a little difficulty, you know, that is so special because then you can also see, you know, oh, the child knows that, oh, you're talking to mommy and daddy and they're, you know, going to help me too. And we can kind of compare notes and everybody's on the same page. I think if everybody was on the same page from administration to teachers, to teacher assistants, to aides, you know, that would make it so much better. Actually, yeah. Communication pretty much, if we had more communication everywhere, that would make
Absolutely. Absolutely. You were mentioning that you oftentimes will have kids who aren't challenged by visual impairment working with your kids. That's something I did way, way back in 1989. I was working at a school for kids with severe developmental disabilities. And it was my job to bring these kids out into the community, give them opportunities to develop friendships and relationships with kids without disabilities. And I think the school hired me because the idea of integration was just starting to be spoken about. Mm-hmm. And I think the school hired this dopey guy who wanted to be a clown because they said, well, let's put this idea to bed. Let's find somebody that's going to run this program into the ground. It's going to fail. And then we'll have our kids in our hospital setting. And it turned out to be a huge success, not because of me, but because of the fact that the kids, that quote unquote typical kids that we were introducing to our students, were so enthusiastic about it. They just loved the idea of getting to know somebody who was different. And these kids were very different. And it was a huge success to the point where 3 or 4 years after the program was proven to be successful, that hospital school closed and the kids were all integrated back into their home districts.
Yeah, that is great.
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah, the preschool that I work at, preschools, it's an integrated, most of it's an integrated setting. It is pretty much all of it. It's a special education preschool. So when I go into a classroom, there might be a student that I'm working with, obviously with a visual impairment, but there might be other students within that classroom who are on the spectrum, mm-hmm. or ADHD or whatever their particular disability is, whatever their needs are. And what is so heartening is that the kids are all accepting, mm-hmm. and they are generous. They teach us so much, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about I Hear the Snow, I Smell the Sea, and find out more about you.
Okay, great. Yes. My website is janmilicic.com.
Wonderful. We've had a great time speaking to the author of I Hear the Snow, I Smell the Sea. Our guest has been Janice Milicic. Jan, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, I hope you had as much fun listening to this episode of Reading With Your Kids as I had creating it. Thanks for hanging out with us here at Reading With Your Kids. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please share a link to the show with someone you love. Maybe post about it on your socials. We would be so very grateful if you could leave us a 5-star review. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm so very grateful to the people who made this episode so amazing, starting with our guests, Kathleen and Beth Rooney. Be sure to check out their debut picture book, Leaf Town Forever. We also want to thank Janice Milicic, please be sure to check out Be Careful What You Hear. I want to thank my incredible team, Fatima Khan, Chris Doherty. I want to thank our sponsors. You know, real magic happens when you support our sponsors and use our promo code. You get a great deal, and we may earn a small commission, and that helps keep the lights on and helps us keep spreading the joy of reading together. And that promo code, READ, R-E-A-D, READ. I also want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are incredible. You're working hard every day. You come home and you still find time to read with your kids because you know how much they will get from it. Thank you so very much for helping to make the world a kinder, more empathetic, more loving place. And like I said, you do that every time you read with your kids. Till next time, go make some reading magic happen.